In Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Today on Straight Talk Africa, the African Continental Free Trade Area has entered into force. Could this development trigger an economic game changer for the people of Africa? That discussion is coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Sheka Sali, and today we are discussing the African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement that was officially launched earlier this month at the African Union Summit in Niger. The landmark trade deal establishes the largest free trade area in the world since the World Trade Organization was founded in January 1995. The Economic Pact aims to boost cross-border trade by reducing or eliminating tariffs and red tape. My colleague Porondiho has more on the story.
After nearly 4 years of talks, an agreement to form the African Continental Free Trade Agreement was ratified in Niger earlier this month. The new trade initiative brings together 1.2 billion people, creates a 3.4 trillion economic bloc, and ushers in a new era of development. Shaka Sali, while appearing on VOA's Shaka Extra Time, an internet broadcaster only, said the timing of this trade pact could not have come at a better time. He also says the credit should go to Rwandan President Paul Kagame, who started this initiative and was one of the first people to sign it in March 2018.
I think, frankly, we should basically give credit to the man who came up with that idea and pushed it, despite a lot of naysayers, and that is the Rwandan president, Major General Paul Kagame.
After months of reluctancy over competition concerns, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari at the African Union summit in Niger launched the African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement by signing Africa's largest economy into the deal. But while there is much hope that pan-African trade will grow, structural weaknesses are expected to make it a slow process. Inter-regional trade in Africa currently accounts for 17% of the continent's total exports, compared to 69% in Europe and 59% in Asia.
African trade today is conducted on US dollars, euro, and increasingly renminbi. What this is doing is to reduce the use of third currencies in the bilateral trade settlement in Africa, because we estimate that that costs Africa between $5 to $7 billion. And beyond that, it also reduces the trade.
Pat Utomi, a Nigerian professor of political economy and management expert, says this trade deal could drive Africa's numbers up to 52%.
Other African countries stand to profit also from Nigeria being engaged. It will not only lead to Nigeria's economy becoming bigger, but lead to those other African economies becoming stronger and much bigger. So together, the mutual benefits of trade will lead to elevating the Nigerian African status away from the poverty of today.
Brooke Hailu-Baisha, a journalism professor at the E.W. Scripps School of Journalism at Ohio University, says Eritrea, Africa's only non-signatory to the trade pact, should seriously consider signing the agreement.
It's sad that the Eritrean government did not believe in the merits and in the goodness of this new free trade association, and to line up with African brothers and sisters. No country had succeeded in the world by isolating itself.
Once fully operational, the Free Trade Accord is projected to boost the level of intra-Africa trade by more than 52% by the year 2022, according to the UN Economic Commission for Africa. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. And joining us today are two distinguished guests. Leira Ndiaye is President and Chief Executive Officer of the Initiative for Global Development, based here in the nation's capital of Washington, D.C. And Abdul Rashid Abubakari is a journalist, public policy expert, and publisher of the African Diaspora Today magazine. I have to say, Leira and Abdul, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Dr. Shaka Sale.
Thank you.
You're most welcome, except that when you talk about doctor, you really have to know that I have no clinic to put. Well, later in the program, we'll give our audience a chance to call in with your question or comment. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, especially you, Leira. This is the first time you have at least appeared on Straight Talk Africa, hosted by me. What exactly do you do at the Global Initiative?
Yeah, first of all, I would like to thank you again for having me this afternoon with you. The Initiative for Global Development was created in 2003 by Bill Gates Sr. and other business leaders in the U.S., and it was in response to the attacks of the Twin Towers in New York, where they realized that we really needed to address security issues by promoting private sector investment and thereby creating more jobs. So since I joined IGD a year ago, our focus has been Africa, and the mission that we have is to educate, advocate, and train people on how to do business in Africa and make sure that we increase U.S. trade relation between with Africa. And we do that through programs, and we also convene some meetings, high-level meetings with presidents most of the time, and also with our companies through our Frontier 100 Leaders group.
Well, Leira, I must mention, first of all, that you come from Côte d'Ivoire, others call it the Ivory Coast. It is an honor for you, perhaps, to become the first African to hold that position?
I am actually the first African at this position. My predecessor, I have two that I can name that you most likely know. One is the current administrator of USAID, Mark Green. Was a former president and CEO of IGD, and I can also name Dr. Mima Nedeljković, who is the past president.
The former community leader in New York City,
exactly.
Mark Green.
Yes.
What about you, Oga, the man from the land of the Ogas, Nigeria itself?
Yes, thank you so much, Dr. Shaka Sale, for having me this afternoon, and for bringing up this important topic. The trade, free trade area and agreement. I'm a journalist, and also I'm the convener of Diaspora Today CEO Forum. It's a forum where we bring like minds, young entrepreneurs together in Washington, D.C. to discuss important topics like the African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement, how it can impact Africans in the diaspora. Mm-hmm. And also I am a correspondent and also founding member of the Central Africa Broadcasting Network Corporation, also based here in Washington, D.C., a TV, online TV platform. That highlights, events and news, entertainment happening on the continent of Africa.
Unlike Leira, who happens to be with a group that is sponsored and was founded by a family whose member at one time was the richest man on this planet Earth, what about you? Where do you get the funding from?
Well, from generous donors, most of the time our programs and traveling covered by African Export and Import Bank, for example, sponsored our members, to Cairo to cover the intra-Africa trade, free trade. And, most of the time we just do what we have to do to make business happen and to make journalism work.
It is very interesting you mentioned the African Export and Import.
Yes.
That was established, apparently, from my homework by the African Development Bank.
Yes.
A president whose name happened to be Mr. Ndiaye.
Yes, Dr.
Would that perhaps be your dad?
Very, very, it's my prestigious dad, and it's very heavy to carry his legacy.
Very interesting. How are you doing so far in terms of fitting in his shoes?
It's not going to be able, it's going to be very difficult to fit in his shoes, but what I know is at least do my best so that I can honor his memory.
You do your part.
Yes.
Very interesting. So what about this current development? Are we talking about something very huge here?
Yes, we're talking about something very huge because the continental free trade continental agreement will actually create more jobs, for example, in Africa. Mm-hmm. And with this trade agreement, Africa will become the largest world trade bloc, with covering 1.2 million people. Billion people, sorry,
yes.
And with a potential GDP estimated at more than 3.4 trillion. So it is a huge opportunity for Africa. And also this agreement will break down all the current trade barriers. And as a result, it will accelerate the economic growth and stimulate our economies.
Abdul, what about you? Huge deal?
Huge deal, and I want to say that...
Huge deal, obviously, if it is managed very well.
Dr. Shaka, and I want to say here that the document, the agreement itself, it's a pillar, in moving towards a border-free Africa.
We should emphasize, by the way, that this is really not a new idea. This is, in fact, an idea which was initially, I think, raised by the founding fathers of what became the OAU. And we are talking about the kid from Crawford, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah himself,
yes.
The founding Ghanaian president.
Yes, and interestingly, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah mentioned that in order for Africa to grow, Africa must unite. During the establishment of the Organization of African Unity, as you mentioned, he pronounced that, and that was the initial concept. That was the initial idea to take away the barriers of doing business and transaction among Africans.
Very interesting. Now, Leila, first of all, we have to talk about the issue of implementation. When does this deal get implemented?
Well, when the agreement was ratified recently in Niger, the head of state have to make sure that the five instruments that are still pending be implemented. So this agreement will really depend on the capacity of African government to make sure that all the tenets of this agreement are implemented on time. And also make sure that all the economic and trade systems are harmonized. Until they are not, I don't think this agreement will be entered into full force. One thing that I would like also to stress out is One element that we should really consider is the security issue. Without security, this agreement will not fulfill its mission, full mission. So security is the number one priority as far as I'm concerned. And then they should integrate security simultaneously with the five instruments, including the rules of origin. They also have to create a portal, negotiating portal. They are talking about a system that has to be implemented for monetary purposes by the Afreximbank, Bank, etc. So they need to do that, and I think the deadline is by 2022.
Yes, 2022.
Mm. Yeah.
Interesting.
And, you know, to add to what Dr. Ndiaye said, in Cairo, for example, at the intra-Africa trade, you know, because that is where they tested the water.
Right.
You know, we want to bring everybody together. Let's put this in practical.
Does Africa have the necessary infrastructure, for example, in order, in fact, to participate in intra-Africa trade? Because it seems to me, when you look at the history of Africa, the infrastructure, for the most part, was put in place by the colonial authorities and was designed essentially to extract goods and services to Europe and, to a certain degree, the United States. Do you have the infrastructure?
I think we do have the infrastructure in Africa to move, you know, to push this agreement further. There is no doubt that
you have you don't have the adequate railway system, for example.
For example, in Ethiopia, they have very effective train system.
Abdul, we are talking about Africa here.
Yes, but we have to also consider country by country.
What about perhaps raising the idea of the airlines? You know, in situations where obviously railways and the road network is inadequate and it's not something, frankly, you can just put in place. What about the airlines? Are the air spaces, for example, going to be very free so that some of these key African airlines can have unfettered access to whichever country they are going to trade in?
So interesting. That is what that is why I was trying to give you synopsis into what happened in Cairo, because that is where everything was tested. You know, every small SMEs, private sectors, was invited to Cairo.
What do you mean by SMEs?
That is small, medium enterprises.
Okay, good.
So they were invited to Cairo to bring their products, originally 100% product finished on the continent of Africa. They bring your products to Cairo, and the Afreximbank bankrolled the conference in partnership with the government of Egypt and collaboration with the African Union. All trade ministers on the continent of Africa, all members of ministers of finance came, and the idea was that, okay, in setting up the African Continental Free Trade Agreement to do business among each other, let's bring together over 60,000 participants came to Cairo. And the only challenge, like you mentioned, the infrastructure, the only challenge that I observe, because I interview, you know, small business owners, you know, private investors, and big businesses on the continent of Africa. So during my interaction and interview with them, the problem was a lady from Ghana. She produced shea butter and soap. She brought these products to Cairo, but she still have to go through hurdles of, you know, protocol, custom protocol of Cairo.
And paying tariffs.
And paying heavy tariffs.
Yes.
So she almost lost thousands of dollars in that process. It took the intervention of Ghana Embassy in Cairo to say, hey, she's coming to participate in the Inter-African, and your president is taking over the leadership of the African Union head of state in the next couple of months. So we have to allow some goods and products and give it a pass to come in. So she was, I think, a day or two to the event, she was able to get her product in. And interestingly, Shaka, everybody, including Dangote, that
What do you mean about Dangote? There are not many people, when you say Dangote, who know who you are talking about.
That
you're talking obviously about
the
richest man on the African continent.
Yes.
Let's say it.
So, yes, the richest man on the African continent.
The richest black man on earth.
The richest black man on earth.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Alhaji Aliko Dangote also, you know, came and, you know, which is
the man is
head
that,
he's
probably the, has the largest cement, you know,
industry in Africa. So it's also almost completed his refinery in Nigeria. It will be officially opened in 2023.
It is a high time. I mean, how can Africa produce oil and yet they cannot refine it on its own territory? Yeah.
So, you know, in concluding my discussion on intra-Africa trade in Cairo was the fact that I believe strongly with what happened in Cairo the first ever on the continent of Africa intra-Africa trade. I believe that the proper infrastructure can be put in place that will accelerate the growth and development of Africa.
Very interesting.
If I may say something about the infrastructure, because progressively we are improving our infrastructure. And this is where, I know you won't like it, but this is where China comes into play.
And what do you mean, you know I won't like it?
Because I'm a voice of America, so
I mean, what are you talking about? I mean,
we are
a free,
talk and
independent
talk.
Media.
Okay, so anyway, so this is where China comes into play, by investing massively into infrastructure in Africa, and it is happening progressively and surely. And when it comes to the U.S. private sector, this is great for the U.S. private sector, because then the U.S. private sector will be able to capitalize on the new infrastructure built by the Chinese, and then come in with what the U.S. private sector is good at, which is service industry, talking about finance, talking about communication, ICT, agribusiness. And this is where the opportunity lies for the United States private sector, U.S. private sector. But most importantly, this is where the opportunities are for whomever wants to trade with Africa.
Laila, first of all, I would like to honestly tell you that as far as the Voice of America is concerned, it believes that you have a right to own an opinion. So you don't have to worry about that.
Yes, but it's not an opinion, it's a fact, because we have realized that American private sector companies in the infrastructure sector are not doing well at all in Africa.
I don't see anything wrong with Africa going to wherever it can actually benefit. Because let's face it, even the Chinese themselves, the last time I checked, it was a man called Dao Xiaoping, after Chairman Mao Zedong, who actually said that he did not care about the color of the skin of the cat. All he cared about was, could the cat in fact catch the mice? And so he was willing in fact to use capitalism to build socialism.
Yes,
exactly. That's a good one. That's a good one, and I'll remember this one.
Dr. Shaga, you know, Dr. Lea mentioned a very key and very important point here, and I would like to say that she said American companies, most of them are not doing well in Africa.
Right.
In the infrastructure
in
sector.
In the infrastructure sector. You know why? Because the American government failed to take the lead and have a clear policy on how it wants to do business with Africa. American government continue to look down on Africa and continue to take, remember, in the past, Africa has always been a secondary, you know, in a secondary to American foreign policy?
Well, I'm not a spokesman or a spokesperson of the American
I'm a student of foreign policy, and I understand very well, you know, the strategies behind the crafting of the policy.
But what about some
people? But you have a policy expert on the, if I may say so, yeah. Because I, in a previous life, I was a senior director in charge of policy at the at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
Terrific.
And I can tell you that right now, what is important for us is to really capture what we have. And what we have is this opportunity to bring more U.S. companies in the service industry in Africa in order to create more jobs for the youth, for the women, be able to use the American know-how to train. So talking about capacity building.
Right.
And as a policymaker, I can tell you that what is also important is to focus on trade and not aid. And
a combination of both.
But when we're talking about Africa's being in the future the largest trade bloc, it means that Africa in fine will not need aid, but will need new partners. And both on the continent and with foreign nations on a very, and it will strengthen the trust that Africa would have with its partners, and also it will impose respect on the Africa economy.
It can do that only if, in fact, it takes advantage.
Africa's economy, sorry.
If it takes advantage of, for example, a Professor Joseph Stiglitz.
Yes.
Of Columbia University.
Yes.
A man, of course, who won a Nobel, you know, prize for economics at one time, and was also at one time the chief economist of the World Bank.
Yeah.
In his book on globalization, he talks about how Africa has no excuse anymore because the intellectual balance of power has actually been shifting in favor of Africa. Do you agree?
Well,
and what is Africa doing with that opportunity?
Africa is doing everything it can to really take Africa to the next level on the international scene. And we see it, looking at the government is one thing, but looking at the diaspora.
The diaspora.
The African diaspora.
The people.
The people.
Right.
And today marks the 400 years since slavery was ended, right, in America.
Yes.
This year. So, and we, at that time, had what we all know was called the brain drain. And Africa lost most of his gray matter, right?
Now you can call it the brain gain.
We call it the brain gain.
The brain gain.
And it's about time for the people belonging to the diaspora, most notably from the American diaspora, with the largest diaspora in the world, to come and seize that opportunity and give back to the continent.
Some of the most highly trained.
Yes.
In lots of things, really.
Yes.
They call America home.
Of course.
Now, we also have, a lot of other individuals on the African continent. So it's really a question of choosing the right people. In fact, one of my former roommates at UCLA, Ambassador Ali Rana, PhD, he used to be the deputy director general of the World Trade Organization. He used also to be Kenya's ambassador to the UN in Geneva. Mm-hmm. These are some of the people that we need to tap into. There is a guy who is a professor in Europe, Ugandan professor Yash Tandon. He has written books including How Trade is War.
Mm-hmm.
We need these types of people. We just don't need to appoint people simply because they are either related to us by blood ties or because they are our political allies.
Yeah, so you're talking about a competitive approach.
Exactly.
Now. And this is happening. This
and
is
I
happening.
Think that's how also even the diaspora can actually come in.
Yes, the diaspora is being, I mean, you can talk about the diaspora more than I do, but I belong also to the diaspora.
We should look for merit.
Every day, I breathe Africa, I work for Africa, I dream about Africa and I have a vision for Africa.
So it's very interesting. You are probably like Nkrumah, who once said that he is not an African because he was born in Africa.
Exactly.
But because Africa was born inside him.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. So, and it is very, today when you look at how they hire people in institutions such as the AFDB, Afrexim Bank, it is highly competitive. Even at the government level, it is highly competitive. Mm. So I think government should create more incentives for people to come and work with them, you know, in tandem with them. And everybody, I think, is pretty much ready. But it is also for the government to make sure that the diaspora is well received.
Very interesting. Unfortunately, Rida, time is not of this ally. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. So please don't go away because we'll be right back with you.
We're talking about the news and issues you're talking about,
sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
It's time for Our Voices.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidi Ewart, and we appreciate all of the audience feedback. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook. You can watch our show there and leave a comment. Now let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the largest survey of views on corruption in Africa reveals that more than 50% of citizens across 35 African countries believe corruption is getting worse. The July report by Transparency International also states that 1 in 4 people across Africa have paid bribes for access to public services. An in-depth look at corruption on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Elino Modu, and today we are discussing Africa's new continental free trade area. Will it be an economic game changer for the people of Africa? Our guests are Leila Ndiaye, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Initiative for Global Development, based here in Washington, D.C., and Abdul Rashid Abubakari, publisher of the African Diaspora Today magazine. I have to say, Leila and Abdul, once again, I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Thank you.
Who would you say, for example, when you look across the continent, who do you think are the countries which are likely to benefit most and immediately out of this arrangement? It seems to me, frankly, that there are those countries that have some reasonable industrial capacity, manufacturing bases and stuff like that.
I will talk about, first of all, Nigeria.
Nigeria? Really?
Because this agreement before Nigeria joined was not as strong. Now that Nigeria has joined, it has strengthened the agreement, and Nigeria being the largest market in West Africa, and with a lot of industries, Abdul Rashid was talking earlier about Mr. Dangote, with started in Nigeria.
Yes.
And so Dangote is a Nigerian brand. So I would see Nigeria benefiting from this agreement immediately. I would also see Rwanda.
What about South Africa? You're forgetting South Africa.
I am going to talk about South Africa. Rwanda, thinking about the ICT industry, the service industry, Rwanda would be one great candidate. Kenya. Ethiopia.
Egypt.
Egypt. Yes. And also South Africa, of course. And then we don't have to forget our friends from Morocco.
Yes.
And because Morocco also already has a free trade agreement with the U.S. So it is going to boost the Moroccan's trade. And other countries will follow. Will follow. And
interesting. What about your country, Ivory Coast?
Ivory Coast, of course, will benefit and has the infrastructure and has the I would say the human resources also to benefit, because as you may know, Ivory Coast is really the lead in when it comes to the Wameyu community
Ivory Coast will host the AGOA forum
in August, and you also have Senegal and you have Ghana. But when you ask me the question straight ahead, I think Nigeria, I think Kenya, I think Ethiopia, South Africa, I think Rwanda. And then when it comes to West Africa, I will talk about Ghana before Ivory Coast and Senegal, even though I come from there,
Nigeria has the largest economy, you know, in Africa.
Followed by
the Southern African economy and also...
But when it comes to industrialization, it's a little bit challenged. In fact, it comes pretty much, very, very much behind South Africa.
In terms of...
They have the people. They have the market.
Exactly. So in terms of the market, Nigeria has the largest economy on the continent of Africa. So, and you will see that it's a big deal, you know, for Nigeria to come into the game.
Yes.
You know, and that was why the, African Union head of state and also African Union Commission push, you know, the government of Nigeria to see the need for it to come into the, you know, continental
everything to gain,
agreement.
Really.
You know, it has everything to gain. And if you look at it very well, Dr. Shakasali, I think at this point, Africa has to move very, very fast, because we only trade among each other 12% trade among African states.
Mm.
You know, unlike Europe, that is 60%. And, Asia, that is almost 70%.
57%.
You know, so when you look at all that, and you're saying that China economy is strong, Europe economy is strong, this is what is going to make Africa economy strong and ahead in the global economy.
I'm afraid we have to be a little bit democratic. As a matter of fact, there are some people who are saying that before this arrangement came into place, perhaps Africa, in fact, need to embrace what is the equivalent of the American First Amendment. You're talking about freedom of expression, talking about the fact that Africans need to really have the right to own an opinion, even if sometimes it may differ with the ruling
party. Dr. Shakasali, I think that is where the diaspora need to move and, get over all others and think Africa, like, Dr. Leila said, and think Africa, breathe Africa, and take up this massive movement of homecoming call,
yes,
as a challenge for every African diaspora to be part of this, brain gain.
I'm afraid, Abdul, there's no democracy in Studio 47. If the producer says you have to go, you have to go. Now, we have to be inclusive in the sense that we have to go. In fact, to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers.
Okay.
And so there is a caller apparently calling from Uganda. Hello? Hello, good evening.
Hello?
Yes, sir. What is your name, sir?
Good evening. I'm Samuel from Uganda.
Yes, Samuel. How are you?
I'm terrific. I'm Dubu Shaka. After a long time.
I like
Let
that.
Let me go to the lady from... Sorry?
I like that. You are terrific, and I have to tell you, frankly, that I am hugely terrific. Go for it, please.
Let me go to the lady from Cote d'Ivoire, Madame Raila.
Yes, please.
Are we going to see the creation of African common currency?
Yes.
On the issue of implementation of the Niger Agreement, when are we going to see its physical implementation? And lastly, will security be integrated in terms of having a United African Security Central Command Center? Where will its headquarters be? Thank you, Ndugu Shaka, and always, your brother. Thank you.
You're most welcome. It's all yours, Laila.
Thank you. So the ECO is the new currency that West African countries will have, and the goal is to implement that agreement that was signed in Niger by 2020.
And that is for the regional grouping ECOWAS,
ECOWAS,
correct?
For all the 15 countries.
Right.
So it is a good sign, because we were talking earlier about harmonizing all the trade and economics systems, and having a common currency will definitely help there. And I think that by leveraging already on all the trade, the regional trade blocks, mm-hmm. and the opening Africa to mm-hmm. new trade routes, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. We will be able to make sure that we spark more job creation and also capacity building, but most importantly, we will streamline, you know, the path mm-hmm. to innovation, to industrialization, and also to entrepreneurship. Now, this agreement, once the ECO is into effect and is circulating in West Africa, we will be able to realize everything I just said a minute ago.
So what about
the security?
The CFA?
The CFA, so the CFA in West Africa, 8 countries carry that currency. And the CFA will become the ECO.
The former Francophone, you know, these Francophone countries.
Countries, yeah.
But it's very interesting that those countries actually use the CFA, which Mother France itself no longer, in fact, mm-hmm. uses. Because the last time I checked, France is part of the euro.
Yeah, and you cannot even convert the CFA nowhere. even in France, you can't convert it.
And
I remember it was back in 89. I came here, and they had the Rings Bank at DuPont Circle.
Yeah.
And we were still able to change the CFA. And then by 1990, the early 1990s, after the devaluation, it was over. And until today. So I would like to answer the question with regards to the
security.
Yes.
And I will give you an example of what is happening currently in the G5 Sahel region, where 5 countries are doing their best, actually, to create their own security system in order to control the threat, the terrorist threat. And we hope that more countries in Africa, where conflict is still a current issue, team up together, because I do believe that if everybody, as you just said, unite, and address Africa's current security situation as one, we will be able to do more. And we should, you know, seek the help of our partners and allies such as the U.S. and, of course, France when, and Europe, the European Union, when it comes to training, when it comes to giving us some help. I'm not here a security expert, but yes?
Yes, you know, also part of the pillars, you know, I mentioned in the beginning that the document, the agreement itself is a pillar. So other pillars of that agreement.
What do you mean by a pillar?
That is, it's a section of that document, the agreement, the African Continental Agreement. Part of it is security. Part of it is customs regulation.
Yes.
You know.
But when you talk about security, what about some people who say that in order for you really to deal with security, you have to first and foremost identify the fundamental root causes so that you could actually address them. That's because the manner in which so far security is being taken care of is through, people say, governments have essentially been addressing the symptoms.
Yes, may I answer that question, please? And one root is unemployment.
Exactly.
And today,
of the youth.
Of the youth. And
lack of skills.
Yeah, and the late President Houphouët Boigny said once, a man that cannot feed himself is not a free man. Right? So such a man who cannot, he's not a free man, so which means this person cannot think properly, is thinks that he's useless for the society. And when he has an easy way to get away from his difficulties and so forth and so on, he is most likely going to join some terrorist groups and etc. So now, with the CFTA is supposed to boost intra-Africa trade by 60%, and that was the estimated by the African Union and also Afrexim Bank. And once it does that, it will create jobs.
Terrific.
It will create jobs, especially for this youth. And this is, I think,
you have to
the
make sure
most
that,
important
you don't have
question
that,
to be
you don't
answered.
Have that being run by bureaucrats who can engage in corruption and all that kind of stuff. I think that people who are going to run that should be paid very well so that they are not tempted.
I think that's part of the I think that's part of the ongoing negotiation, you know, among member states of the African Union. You know, the structuring and ensuring that, you know, through the secretariat, which is going to be based in Ghana.
Yes.
You know, through the secretariat, that people, you know, that are qualified, highly qualified, are put in place in strategic positions to manage the effectiveness and the implementation of the
Let's go to, again, the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers, before I come back to you.
Okay.
Good evening, Uganda. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Hello? I'm afraid I do not hear the caller from Uganda. Now, what about, you talk about obviously, the viability and the importance of the African Continental Free Trade Area. There was also something else called NEPAD.
Yes.
The New Partnership for Africa's Development, whose headquarters is in the Midlands, between Pretoria and Johannesburg. I've been there. At one time, it was said that that is the program that was going to help develop Africa. I no longer hear people talk about NEPAD. What makes you really be so confident that this time around, Africa got it right?
I think this time around, Africa got it right because of the fact that this is a time where we have emerging economies, you know, coming, you know, emerging economy like Singapore, you know, shining in the global market.
Yeah, and, but Singapore has democracy.
Well, Africa also has democracy.
Out of, say, 55 member countries, that includes Western Sahara, by the way, which is not yet a sovereign state. Okay, let's agree, at least by the African Union measurement, you have 55
member
How
states.
Many countries can you tell me that enjoy democracy out of those 55?
Well, I would say, in fact, significant number of those countries.
Significant?
Yes.
Number. What do you mean by significant?
Dr. Shaka.
You probably want to have actually more than 15.
Okay, that's significant
enough. And you call that significant?
15 is significant enough, Dr. Shaka, to move to the next level. Remember, how many at the beginning of the Continental Free Trade Agreement, how many countries signed to the deal? How many countries signed at the initial, at the onset?
Signing is one thing. Delivering is quite another.
Exactly. So now, gradually, people have, you know, in Cameroon, the Cameroonians are standing up to, you know, that we need democracy.
You need democracy because, let's face it, when I was in universities, my friend, they used to tell us about how there were two countries, for example, one in West Africa, which was Ivory Coast, another one in East Africa, which was Kenya, which were presented as successful show cases. And guess what? You know what happened in Ivory Coast? And you know what nearly happened in Kenya in 2007?
In 2007, yes.
Correct?
Correct.
At the end of the day, democracy is very important, because it is an equal opportunity employer.
That's true. And also, at the end of the day, democracy is a gradual process.
It is a gradual process, but most African countries, my brother, have been independent, unless you are talking about flag independence here.
50 years.
For more than 50 years. That's more than a generation.
Okay, so, and you know, you agree with
and
me that...
And when you compare and contrast them with their cousins in Asia, it's a totally different ballgame.
Well, if I can jump in here and say that it's about time, if Africa is not ready 50-plus years after independence to implement an agreement, I will feel sorry for my continent, right? And it is not the case.
To implement and respect
and
it.
And respect it. I don't think it will be the case.
To feed its people.
Because people know that Africa will massively benefit from this free trade agreement. And they need that in order to create jobs for their population,
right,
to address their food security
issues,
and et cetera. And also, as I said earlier, to make sure that the respect is imposed on Africa, and it goes, of course, by
dignity,
respect,
the but African personality.
It goes by applying democratic rules, and we really need to...
We need social, economic, political
justice.
If you do not want to mention the key word democracy, at least we need justice.
And
traditional African society, you find those types of things.
Of course,
but
of
what
course.
About these people who control the state?
But it's
this
about,
thing called the government.
It's about really setting the priorities. And unfortunately, recently, we've seen in a couple of countries, the priority shouldn't be putting in jail a journalist because of his opinion. The priority shouldn't be putting in jail his opponent because he doesn't believe in your
because
governing
he has an opinion
government program
from yours.
Because you feel threatened that he will eventually come and rule. But this is about what democracy is about. And the priority also today that we've seen on the African continent is that a lot of heads of state right now are thinking about how they can tweak the constitution so that they can have a third term. But it's
a third term, which some people, of course, refer to as a sad term.
A sad term instead of a third
precisely term. This business of shifting constitutional political goalposts
should be stopped, and we really need to be serious here. And we mentioned Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, the founding fathers of the Pan-Africanism, and you mentioned my dad, and he once said that he can go and die at any time because the pillars, talking about pillars of Africa, were already there.
And his conscience was clear.
And what are the pillars? One, the African Development Bank. Second, Afrexim Bank. Third, African Union. Fourth, the Free Trade Agreement. And then it is for us now, as the children of these people who preceded us, to be able to carry the burden, but I don't call it the burden, I'll call it like the opportunity and the honor to take Africa to where its founding fathers wanted Africa to be today.
It's very interesting because you remind me about saying that all of life is about passion, action, and reaction. And to ignore the passion, action and reaction of your time or your generation is to risk having not really lived at all, occupying space. Africa should stop occupying space. And Africa does not belong to specific rulers. It belongs to all its daughters and sons, all its children. If it were a corporation, we should feel comfortable that all of us have equal shares in that cooperation.
It is true.
That's the only way it can work.
It is true.
And that is, and
but this business of someone saying that, that he's uniquely gifted,
Dr. Shaga,
as if he went to some kind of unique schools, was born in a unique neighborhood or village, come on.
Dr. Shaga, good governance is also a key pillar in the African continental
It is key. And the quality education.
Exactly. Yes.
So, and the social political consciousness of the people.
Yes.
People need civic education that they know that they are actually the bosses.
Exactly.
Of these people who live in the state house.
Exactly.
These people who are chief justices. These people who are ambassadors. These people are sitting on these people's backs.
That is true. That is absolutely true. That is true. You know, and that is, you know, correct. And it is time, I think it is time for young generations in Africa to take the leadership of this institution that, you know, we are talking about.
The future of Africa, there is no question about it, is actually in the changing demographics in tandem with the social media, which exposes them.
Exactly.
And you know, one thing is interesting. You know, Africa has the largest number, the largest population of young people in the world. You know, so there is no doubt that Africa will succeed. Just to come back to that question that you asked, that Africa will succeed on this Continental Free Trade Agreement deal. Yeah.
It has to succeed.
Africa has
failure is not should not really be an option, because first of all, Africa is incredibly wealthy. Africa is not poor.
That's true.
It is the Africans who are poor because the people who manage their resources and what have you are failing Africa. Look at China, for example. When I was growing up, China was not one of those countries you talked about. The choice of transportation was a bicycle.
Even Singapore.
You know?
Even Dubai.
Now it is the world factory, the factor of the world. But guess where they actually get resources from?
From Africa. That's true.
And Africa is in the business of helping other countries become superpowers.
Yeah.
Except itself.
And we have to focus on our youth. We need to
educate
our youth.
Them.
Civic education
is
a priority. And unfortunately,
and the quality education.
The quality, and this is where the U.S. private sector also can play a role, and with the diaspora.
Unfortunately, you know, time happens not to be our best ally. On that note, Our guests today were Leila Ndiaye and Abdul Rashid Abubakari. Thanks to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive. Thank you.
Welcome to Learn.